Every single decision we make in business as a non-finance team affects the bottom line.
Am I right in saying that there is actually a cost involved in not equipping non-finance teams with some financial acumen?
Absolutely. I mean, I always say, you know, the workshops that we run will pay for themselves just after one better decision that's made.
And that's how you get like smarter. And that's how you get a little bit more agile. And when these big moments come, then you're not so surprised.
The definition of the CFO was the person that gets fired if anything goes wrong.
Before we start this podcast, will you please like, follow, and subscribe to the Right Place podcast right here on YouTube, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Rudolf and I would also love to connect with you on LinkedIn, so look us up there too. Thank you. Cheers. You're at the right place. My guest today turns the mystery of business finance into something tangible for every business owner and team member, where they can grasp it, contribute to it, and make a successful business themselves. Andrew Fick is the founder of Finance Fusion. He's a profitability strategist, a BRI enthusiast, a fellow unconventional CA like myself, and yes, he's also a member of the Lacquer Network. Today, we're going to explore how anyone in your team can win with business finance, how you can take the pressure off yourself as you're building your business, and where you need to focus in order to maximize your profits. Welcome, Andrew. Great to chat to you today.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
Awesome, Andrew. Andrew, let's dive right in. Why do you tell people that non-finance teams must care about the finances of the company? I mean, isn't that the CFO's problem or the boss's problem?
You know, John, the CFO sometimes thinks that they're like looking after the money, which I suppose they are, and looking after the profitability of the company. But if you think about an organization, any organization, who are the people making the decisions in the organization? It's the non-finance teams. The sales guys are going to go to negotiate deals with clients. The marketing guys are negotiating with suppliers. The finance guys aren't around when that happens, and it's too late. So I'm a strong believer of empowering non-finance teams to understand finance well enough. They don't need to become chartered accountants or accountants, but they need to understand the numbers well enough so they can make informed decisions. And that's my story, and that's what I love doing.
Awesome, Andrew. So am I right in saying that there is actually a cost involved in not equipping non-finance teams with some financial acumen?
Absolutely. I mean, I always say, you know, the workshops that we run will pay for themselves just after one better decision that's made. I mean, every single decision we make in business as a non-finance team affects the bottom line. So, I mean, you can imagine a salesperson going off to negotiate a deal with a client. The salesperson is terrified of the numbers. They're terrified of the accounting side of things and the percentages and the margins and things. And the client is well equipped to negotiate with the salesperson because the client is part of supply chain or the procurement team. They're the numbers guys, and the numbers guys are negotiating good deals. So the salesperson is more than likely going to be selling something for less than what they could have sold it for. I mean, the decisions that we make as non-finance definitely affects the bottom line.
And I mean, if you unpack those decisions a little bit further, I mean, it's not just the rands and cents. I mean, it's also sometimes the T's and C's and what you are committing the company to. It might be a once-off invoice, but it also might be a longer-term deal. It might be an export thing. It might have foreign currency involved and all of that. And I mean, you can easily commit your company to something that you don't understand the consequences thereof.
Absolutely, John. You know, just recently I've been running a couple of workshops for a client. I'm a fractional CFO of one client that's quite a big engineering firm. And you can imagine there's two engineers as owners and very clever, very bright individuals. But very focused on the operations. You know, they'll put a tender in, win a tender, get cut down on the price. And, you know, getting cut down on the price is one thing, but getting cut down on the price, on the sales price, and then not looking after it after that in terms of what do we buy our engineers for? We know what we're going to sell them for because it's part of the contract. But what are we going to pay for those engineers? And what are the payment terms for the engineers? If the client is paying us 3 months after we've done the work, but we have to pay our people, you know, within the month, the cash flow is going to be severely impacted. And then, of course, there's the cost of capital. There's the cost of of raising money. If we need to raise money, if we win a big job, we might need to, you know, borrow money or extend our overdraft. So yeah, John, it's not just about the numbers. As you say, you very correctly say the T's and C's are just as important.
No, exactly. And when it comes down to making these decisions, I mean, you can't always have the CFO in the room with you. I mean, especially if you've got sales managers or marketing managers or HR managers doing deals all over the country or all over the world. I mean, you need to almost have your wits about you, because also the people that you're dealing with might be better informed than you are. So they might know that they might know their T's and C's, their rates, their charges off by heart. And now you're sitting in a place and you almost have to make a split second decision. Is this some of the training that you prepare the people for?
Absolutely, John. And that's the biggest the biggest pushback I get from potential clients. You know, they say, you know, Andrew, you want to train my sales guys how to negotiate and how to agree on price and how to understand the numbers. But we've got finance. We've got finance team. And if the client is pushing back on the numbers, our sales guys can always go back to finance and check in with finance. But you know what? You've got your client in the room. You can make a decision now. But unfortunately, you walk away from that one opportunity. You walk away, go and speak to your CFO, go back to your client. I can promise you now, a client's already found somebody else to do the job.
Exactly. And I mean, that to me is the opportunity cost. I mean, the more informed your teams are, the more experienced they are at negotiating, at reading term sheets or reading a set of financial statements or contract, I mean, the better they can represent you, but also the better decisions that they can make. I mean, you've been a CFO in public and private sector. I was a CFO in the public sector more. Everything comes across the CFO's desk eventually. And I mean, I remember back in the day, I was left pulling my hair out because now I had to stand up or stand par for some decisions that were made that I would never have made. But now the decision's been made, the paperwork's done, and now I must either go and find the money or I must explain to the auditors what's going on. So it's easy to blame and to say, look, we don't actually need this. But I mean, it all comes back to bite you in the end. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, John. And you know, I never forget, I was working at Dell Computers in the UK, and I was a green, newly qualified CA. I walked into a bookshop and I picked up a book off the shelf that was sort of like a quick guide to finance. And there was a finance definitions. And the financial manager or the CFO, the definition of the CFO was the person that gets fired if anything goes wrong. And it is so, so true. I mean, I know guys in public sector that were CFOs that were taken to the cleaners and eventually left because not because of their decision, but because of somebody else's decision. They had no part to it whatsoever. So yeah, that's so important for everybody to understand the numbers. I mean, it's the language of business. We can't only have the finance guys understanding the language of business. We're all in this together. Sales, marketing, HR, ops, everybody needs to understand that language.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, a business's finances or financial statements are generally easy to understand if you've got a basic grasp of accounting. But I mean, that's also easy for us to say. I mean, we are two CAs. We've seen a million sets of financials. We can read them backwards. But if I'm a clueless manager or a team member or even a business owner, like, what are some of those key numbers that I should actually be focusing?
So, I mean, obviously, John, as you know, it depends. It depends who we're talking about in the team. But I mean, if you're the entrepreneur looking at your numbers, you obviously want to make sure you're, I mean, I've actually got a series on LinkedIn at the moment. Every Monday, I share a part of the income statement. We're going working our way down to the net profit. And I mean, sales as an example, you want to improve your sales, but improving your sales doesn't just mean improving the number. It means improving the quality of your sales at the same time. You can sell something and make 30%, and you can sell something else for less and make 70%. So what sale do you want to make? And we talk about product mix. What is your product mix? I remember when I was at Dell Computers in Joburg, I was a financial manager there, and it was during the tough times. And what Michael Dell, and I think I've told the story before, what Michael Dell decided was he said, we were going to cap your OPEX, cap your operating expenses. So we only allowed to spend $1 million a month. My accountant was busy there managing the $1 million every month. But then on top of that, we then incentivized our sales guys to sell storage units. So we gave them massive bonuses to sell storage units, because our storage units, servers and things, made like 70% up gross profit, 70% and more, whereas our desktops and our laptops were making like 9 to 21% gross profit. So again, it's about how you manage your business, and it's all about being intentional in your business as well.
It's not just the revenue. I mean, obviously with revenue comes cost of sales. You've got your gross profit, you've got your net profit, and you've got your almost like your other costs to sell. What are all of these hidden costs? I mean, you might be smashing revenue, but you might be adding a whole bunch of other stuff to the bottom line that you didn't anticipate or you're just unaware of. I'm just thinking, I've got an old friend of mine who's had a very successful business for many years, but he couldn't make head or tail of financial statements. And I sat him down, gone through the basics, balance sheet, income statement, cash flow statement. But for him, it was always like money in, money out, and what's left over. Do you still see this in 2025, that business owners are just running it by almost like what's left in the bank?
All the time, John, it's all the time. I mean, no matter what I say to my clients, they go back to that. They go back to the bank statement. How much money have I got in my bank? Can I afford to pay my salaries this month? Can I afford to pay the VAT this month? And yes, cash flow is king, right? The cash flow is king. I mean, that's the lifeblood of the business. We need cash to operate. But at the same time, if you are bleeding on your income statement, so you're making losses every month on your income statement, eventually that's going to catch up, and your cash flow is going to go down, your expenses are going up, and you're going to be in trouble. I had a meeting with a client couple the other day that had just bought a new business about 3 years ago, and they weren't very financial savvy. And I looked at their balance sheet. It was the first time I met them. I looked at their balance sheet and income statement. They were making about 200 to 300,000 rand loss every month. And the man, the owner, was really stressed because he had cash flow problems, like really, really stressed. I felt so sorry for them. And I looked at their balance sheet, and I got goosebumps thinking about it. I looked at their balance sheet, John, and they were insolvent. I mean, they owed more money than they owned. And this was their retirement fund. They had taken all their money and put it into their business. But what was the one mistake they made? They never asked for help. They never asked for help. The other thing, their business was running them. They weren't intentionally driving their business. They didn't even know what their break-even point was. They didn't know what revenue they needed to do every month not to make any profit and not to make any loss. And I mean, those key factors are so important as a business owner to understand, as you know.
Yeah, that's quite a shocking example, and I'm sure it's more common than we actually think that guys are flying very close to the sun, closer to insolvency or going to court than they actually realize, and they almost sometimes appear to like live in this twilight zone of no, everything's okay, or next month will be better, but they've been saying that to themselves for how many years, and it's just things haven't changed because they haven't been like intentional about it. And I mean, you've told me that you tell leaders to stop looking in the rearview mirror. But what does it look like when the team shifts from reactive reporting to intentional, more forward-looking decision-making?
It's actually strange you ask that, because I did a podcast with my client, Hilton Lewis, is on my YouTube channel as well. And we speak about that. We speak about looking in the rearview mirror and looking and being intentional in your business and understanding what your cash flow is going to look like in 9 months' time, what your profit is going to look like in 9 months' time. So I've helped Hilton to work intentionally on the business that we report every month. We have an exco every month where we say, okay, your cash flow is okay, or if you win this big project in November, we're going to need to be tight. We have to be lean, or we may need to phone the bank manager for cash. And that's given him that view. I mean, at the same time, we needed to be able to forecast our net profit after tax for the end of the year so that we could work out what we needed to spend on the BEE spend, so we could achieve the BEE targets we needed to achieve. So without having that foresight and being able to look ahead, we would have been dead in the water. And, you know, Hilton actually really appreciates that, because now he can sleep at night about the numbers. He can sleep at night because he knows that there aren't going to be any surprises. I was taught at a very young age, when I say young, probably in my 30s. I was taught by my really good boss at PwC, you know, we don't want surprises. Clients don't want surprises. The shareholders don't want surprises. And your boss doesn't want any surprises. So why should a business owner surprise themselves at the end of the year?
No, absolutely. And I think it starts with like these small intentional acts where you actually get real about what's actually going on in your business. And exactly like what you said, ask for help. Ask for help. It's difficult to ask for help when you've got the handcuffs and they're marching you off to liquidation court or insolvency court or something like that. That's way, way too late. I'm thinking about that quote. When did you know you were going insolvent? Well, it was first gradually, and then it was like instantly. Like you slowly slip into oblivion, and then one day, like the floor falls out from underneath you, and then it's like just too late. So, I mean, whatever help you can get, and just having conversations with people that are professionals, but also maybe slightly ahead of you. You might have a 50 million rand a year business, but you want to grow to 60, 70, or 100. You need to be talking to those business owners because they're having different conversations. They're implementing different things to your business because they're scaling or they're working on their teams or they're just bringing in better experts than you. And those things, those conversations are going to help you eventually. And that's almost like investing in your own education as well, learning how the business world works. Like if you just work in the silo, it might not end well. It might sound amazing and feel amazing, and it's got this whole fairy tale story, but it can really go off the rails quite quickly.
John, you know, just thinking about it, and a lot of business owners, they think, okay, well, I've got an accountant. I mean, my guy does my books every month or every year. And so I'm fine. And I have my meeting with my accountant. All I want to know as a business owner is, do I still have enough money in the bank? Yes, I do. But am I growing my business intentionally? Am I working on my business intentionally? Do I know where I'm going? No, I don't. Because my accountant is telling me to look in the rearview mirror. That's all the accountant is doing. They're saying, look at this, Andrew. Your rearview mirror looks fantastic. You made 2 million rand profit and you've got 100,000 rand in the bank. And then 3 months later, there's a big surprise. And then your accountant is pointing at you. He's not pointing at himself. Because I'm a very, very, very strong believer of business owners need to know their numbers better than their accountants. Because I promise you now, their accountants are outsourcing that accounting to a clerk that knows how to use Xero. They print off the report or send the report, and that's it. There's no value add. I think we've had this discussion before. There's no value add in that. Spend the money, get somebody professional, or learn it yourself. In fact, and learn it yourself. Yeah.
100%, yeah. Andrew. Now, your company, Finance Fusion, is playing the game of training and educating non-financial people on finance. If I had to sit in on one of your sessions, what would maybe surprise me about the approach that you take?
So we basically teach non-finance people, so any non-finance team, sales, marketing, ops, HR, learning and development, entrepreneurs that aren't financially minded, even board of directors. I mean, you'll be surprised that the board of directors, we all know what happened at Steinhoff, right? You know, the guy stood up, started reading the financial results off. What did everybody else do in the room? The HR person, the marketing person, the CEO, they're all picked up their phones and checked where the other halves were on Facebook, because they were terrified of listening to, because they didn't understand the numbers. So John, it's customized as well. So we can customize it for corporates, but it's simulated. We build a balance sheet and we build an income statement from scratch, in a very simplistic way. We use self-discovery learning, which is magic because people discover the answer. We use breakaway rooms. It's teamwork as well. So we break down the silos in business. So sales and finance and ops, they're all on the same page. They understand the language that they speak as a company as well. And then, yeah, as I say, we customize it for corporate. So the beauty behind that is that it's not one of those 3 to 5 day expensive finance for non-finance courses where you learn things you don't actually need to learn. Mm-hmm. We customize it and tailor it so that you learn what you need to learn to make the decisions you need to make to improve the bottom line. And you walk out of there empowered because we use your your company reports. We use your company transactions. We speak your company financial language, which differs from company to company. Go back to work, make the decisions, and improve the bottom line. Just improve one decision you make the next day. You've paid for the course.
I think it's a wonderful concept because in the real world, you can't afford to make mistakes, or no one wants to make a mistake. But if you're gamifying it or simulating it, you can actually see the impact of making a decision on an invoice or a client or giving discount here or there. And then you can understand this actually has repercussions. I've been doing this wrong, or my thought process or my decision-making process has been wrong. But now, because I can understand the impact, or I can understand how does the CFO view this, or how does the marketing team see this, or how does the admin team see this, then it just gives me that clarity. Okay, this is how I should interpret the paperwork in front of me, or this is the thought process I have to go through before I make a decision. And would you say that this playing and the simulating really helps like take finance off the spreadsheets and into the daily decisions?
Totally, John. It absolutely does. And I think, you know, just to use another example of what you've just said, I had a public workshop last month or the month before, and I had a production manager as one of my participants. And he fed back to us at the end to say that, you know, it's opened his eyes because now he understands the impact that he's making on the business's bottom line. And he actually had already in his mind changed his whole thought process in terms of the production process, because he was talking about doing a whole bunch of short production runs. I can't remember what they produced, but they were doing a whole bunch of short production runs. And in his mind, he had already planned to say, like, he needs to focus on the more profitable production runs. So now, straight away, he's going to go back to work tomorrow. We went back to work the next day, and he was already going to implement something. So that's already sort of ROI.
No, absolutely. And I mean, that type of stuff pays off over time as well, because, I mean, it shouldn't just be one and done training as well. So you should start with the initial training. Then you must reflect on it and let's see what happens over the next month. And then maybe follow up with some additional training, or let's go a little bit deeper, or let's look at our ordering process or our purchasing process or our sales process. Where are there some inefficiencies, or what did you learn in the last month after changing stuff? And that's how you get like smarter. And that's how you get a little bit more agile. And when these big moments come, then you're not so surprised. Then you're like, okay, we thought this might happen. Now we can pivot, or we can make a better decision. But if we just fly blind and like mortar is noch a dag and every day is the same, it's just no way to run a business.
Yeah. Yeah, John, you know, as well, you know, we run the whole Finance Fusion workshops, and everybody gets to understand the numbers and what they need to do. We've recently just launched something else called Finance Guru. Finance Guru basically takes you to the next level in terms of, you know, like managing budgets and ROIs and also the more of the commercial side of things. But we're now also offering profitability workshops. So once your team has been through understanding the numbers, you know, they've already got a couple of ideas in their head. But now let's go, as you say, let's do a little bit more of a deeper dive on this now. Let's spend a couple of hours together as a team and work out what are those projects that we are going to focus on in the next 3 to 9 months in our business to improve our profitability. And how are we going to, you know, how are we going to work together as a team now that we've broken down the silos to actually help the organization to make more profit at the end of the day? And that's the exciting bit, because then the guys get their hands dirty. Then they're using what they've learned in the workshops at, you know, when they get back to the office.
No, absolutely. I love that. And Andrew, maybe one more question on the program that you run. So how do you balance like the technical financial concepts? Because there's so many of those, like with the real world challenges that people are facing day to day, like how deep do you actually get into those challenges?
We're trying to avoid the accounting terminology. We dumb it down into, you know, instead of talking about assets and liabilities, we talk about things that we own and things that we owe. We don't go into great detail on, you know, financial ratios and things like that. And as I said earlier, we focus on the ratios, we focus on the numbers that count, that matter, that make the biggest impact and difference. So we're not trying to create accountants here. All we want to do is we want to help the non-finance teams to understand the language, so they can have an informed decision with the finance team. So that's what we, that's what we're trying to do. And we, yeah, that's what we're trying to do. And I think it's the best way of doing it, because I've heard horror stories of people going off and doing a 5-day finance for non-finance course and then coming back. And it's like, what was that all about? It was great at the time, but I don't know what to do now. It's not relevant for me. Yeah.
No, exactly. And talking about relevance and looking ahead, what skills do you believe every non-finance professional will need over the next 5 to 10 years in order to stay relevant, but also to add value to their company?
I think to know enough about the numbers, I think to understand the language. And I think there's obviously, I mean, now with AI and everything, there's so many tools. I mean, there's so many tools that we can, you know, that we can use in business. And yeah, it's a little bit overwhelming, I think, especially for somebody my age. I think, yeah, but I think to get to understand the tools and pick one and stick with it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Really, I really agree with you there. Andrew, you told me that you collaborated on projects in the Middle East around entrepreneurial thinking. What's exciting you about that project, and how do you see this growing in your own business?
So yeah, John, it's a collaboration I'm doing with another South African company that's gone global, that's, you know, got this contract with this major organization in the Middle East, and we're teaching the organizations to think more entrepreneurially. Because I think maybe this should have been the answer that I gave you in the last question as well. Entrepreneurial thinking is not just for entrepreneurs. We all need to be entrepreneurs. Everybody needs to think entrepreneurially, because it can't just be the business owner or the shareholders that are thinking entrepreneurially. Everybody needs to think like an entrepreneur. Even the human resource manager or director and the marketing director, they all need to think like entrepreneurs. So the exciting part about that project is this organization is so dedicated to teaching their people. I mean, the first workshop I ran, we had 23 people in the room, ranging from 20 odd years old to 60 plus years old. So a various range of people, from finance through to engineering, through to, you know, oil and gas people. And the nice thing with the customized and the gamified approach, we were all on the same page all the time. So it doesn't matter. You don't need to put salespeople and marketing people. You don't need to segment the training. I actually recommend that you put a wide, diverse range of people in the room, because you want to break down those silos and you want to be able to get everybody to put themselves in the other person's shoes, so we can see eye to eye and run this organization more as a team.
That old saying, teamwork makes the dream work, is so important. And especially in the entrepreneurial world and places like the Middle East, where it's ultra competitive, it's quite cutthroat. There's so much new technology coming to the fore. You need to be wide awake and you need to work together. You need to work with those people around you.
Andrew, they are
absolutely fascinating, man. No, I wish you all the best with that project.
Thanks, John.
So at the Right Place podcast, we believe your right place is at the intersection of your roles, your relationships, and your environment. So I just want to focus on that a little bit now. Andrew, you and I were both CAs. We've had that role of CA for many years. We've been CFOs, financial managers, leaders, coaches in this space. How do you see the role of the chartered accountant, the CA, changing, especially in the world of AI that we live in now?
Sure, John. A bit overwhelming. I'm glad I'm not really a CFO of an organization today. Well, if I was, I think I would probably want to hire a whole lot of youngsters, with ADHD, and with real and you know, somebody wants to try new things. In fact, I have hired a finance person for my client, and I'm working with him, and he's a real hard worker. He is using AI as well, and we're actually busy implementing a new ERP system, which has also got an AI functionality. But yeah, John, I think if I was a CFO today, it would be a different story. I can remember my days at Dell Computers when I was in the UK. There were no such things as even a BI tool, a business intelligence tool, when I was there. We wrote, another South African and I wrote a Microsoft Access script and things to actually produce reports out of a data warehouse that used to run through the night, because things were slow in those days. So all the data for that one day was run overnight. We would then run the queries, put the reports together, and have the discussion with the vice president of finance every day. So from then, which was, I want to give away my age here. That was in 1999 until now. I mean, 26 years later, 25 years later, I feel very old thinking about that, right? Because 25, 26 years is a long time. It's a long time, but if you think of the advancement of where we've been and where we are now, it's ludicrous, and especially how things have progressed over the last 3 to 5 years. It's my mind starts spinning just thinking about it. It's crazy. Yeah.
No, I love that answer, Andrew. Yeah, my mind also spins. I mean, back in the day when I first started auditing, I mean, it was manual, hey? It wasn't even yet on Pastel, and it wasn't on Excel. It was on Lotus 1-2-3. So, I mean, that's a proper blast from the past. And now, Andrew, you also have some public sector experience, and I mean, that's a whole different podcast that we could go into, just talking about your public sector experience and that. But are there any positive lessons that you learned in the like the public sector space that you've like held onto in your work in the private sector space and also with Finance Fusion coming from that environment?
Can I give you a short answer?
Yes.
What not to do? Right. What not to do? And I mean there is a typical example of looking in the rearview mirror, and the rearview mirror is like sort of like has lipstick all over it and you can't really see. Because you can't even see what's in the rearview mirror too much. John, I think what I have seen is a diverse thought processes or the different sort of like trains of thought when it comes to public sector. And I did a lot of work in the public sector in the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape, but a lot of local government work, a lot of municipality work, quite a bit of public entity work and provincial government work. We did big jobs for provincial treasury in the Eastern Cape and some national stuff. But it's just amazing our country in terms of the diverse thinking and people around the country. And you can definitely see where it works and where it doesn't work. There's pockets of excellence and the guys are really proud. Think of the guys in Drakenstein, Johan Lebrandt in Drakenstein. He said that guys are so proud of what they've achieved, you know, the best secondary city in the country, what Kevin Jacoby and the guys are doing at the city of Cape Town. I mean, the guys are really achieving. Obviously, there's always bad press and there's always public outcry on certain things, but the guys are doing that. They're doing their best. But I think even in terms of like AI and innovative thinking, I mean, Stellenbosch Municipality, as an example, was really thinking innovatively 15, 20 years ago. Unfortunately, with the slow wheels of supply chain in municipalities, elections, local government elections and changing of the guard and people having it in for other people, it's very difficult to implement. So there are those individuals. And I think where you see success in public sector is where there's been stability. So where you see the same CFO there for a number of years with the same municipal manager, there you will see success. But this swapping and changing all the time, it doesn't do any justice to our country.
Yeah, I think that's a great lesson there that can apply universally. My best clients, when I was at National Treasury and also at the AG, the CFO had been there for many years.
Yeah.
It didn't mean he was the best in the world and he was irreplaceable, but because he was there, he was consistently good at his job and they got consistently good audit results and they weren't in the newspapers for the wrong reasons. On the contrary, for the right reasons.
Yes. I mean, that applies for private sector too. I mean, you want good leadership, you want consistent leadership, and you just want to be innovative and just do it. Stop talking about it and just like, you know, just do it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Andrew, you told me that your word for 2025 is intentional, which I love. And I think we've had an intentional talk about non-finance team members and getting them up to speed on the finances. But how does that word serve you more on like a personal level?
So to intentionally know what I'm going to be doing every week, to intentionally know what is my why. You know, my why is to create those aha moments. My why is to demystify finance in all non-finance people, because John, you'll be so surprised. I mean, we've been in the game for a long time, right? But we've rubbed shoulders with people maybe that understand the numbers. In the last 5 years, I've rubbed shoulders with people that don't understand finance. It's a different world. It's an absolute different world. I did some training for a bank in Port Elizabeth, and there were about 17 of them in the room. The one lady came to me. She said to me, she was literally shaking. She came to me and she said, "Andrew, you know, I'm retiring next year. Just leave me in the corner in the back there. I'll be fine." And after the 3 days, she was like, she came to me. She was like smiling and she put her arms around me. She said, "I've got to hug you." She says, "It was like, this is the first time in my life that I've actually ever really truly understood the numbers. Before that, I was learning the numbers like a parrot." And you can't apply anything when you learn things like a parrot. And I think to be intentional to help other people with their businesses, there's so many entrepreneurs that are really failing because they're too scared to ask for help. In fact, walking to my office now for this podcast, my mom phoned me. And I've got a family member that was really taken for a ride. They got this one phone call. It was my dad's sister. Got this phone call from somewhere in the East and literally sent $1 million. Retirement gone. Finished. And business basically gave the business away because there was no financial acumen. Almost had the house taken away because there was no financial acumen. I said to my mom, I said, why didn't they just ask me for help? One phone call for help. I would have been there in their lounge and I would have shown them what they were doing wrong. And it's sad. It's very, very sad. And there's so many business people like that. And it doesn't need to be like that. It really doesn't need to be like that.
Wow. And yeah. No, that's a shocking story. And I mean, especially at that age when you've built up your empire, your little mini empire for yourself, looking forward to retiring or exiting your business. And then you give it away on a whim to a snake oil salesman that just comes by at the right time of day. And you just think, oh, this is my chance to double or nothing here. And you walk away with nothing. And then, I mean, it's so shocking. And I mean, this isn't happening to uneducated people. It's happened to smart people and business owners who've built stuff and been successful. I mean, it's shocking. Yeah.
No, totally, totally, John. And it's like a comedy of errors. You know, it's one error after the next. But you only need to make one. You only need to make one error. That's the thing. Get to know your numbers better than your accountant. That's what I'm going to keep on saying that.
Yeah, no, that is the bottom line. Now, Andrew, you and I, we didn't just meet at the Lacquer Network. We've actually known each other for a little bit longer than that. I remember we met at a Cape Chamber of Commerce event in the Cape Town CBD, and we've been connected ever since. Now you're a member of the Lacquer Network. Maybe just share a little bit about your networking journey and then joining the Lacquer Network and your experience so far.
So one word, it's been Lacquer, right? Definitely been Lacquer. It's so amazing to network with people that are like-minded. We all want better for South Africa. The other thing is also so lekker connecting with people globally and around the world, because we all want to, we're all big thinkers, right? And we all want to go global. I mean, I'm in Saudi, I've done some work in Canada, but I'm wanting to really establish myself in the USA market. You know, through another training company, you know, alliances and things like that. But the people that I've met and the advice that I've got from the Lacquer Network is next level. It's just so nice to be able to bounce ideas off like-minded people. One phone call, one WhatsApp message, and you get an answer from somebody that can help you. That's the trick here. I mean, I have a lot of connections through my, you know, through my journey with PwC and my work. Lots of connections, but those connections aren't necessarily like-minded connections. They may have been clients. They may have been, you talk about snakes. They may have been snakes. They may have been friends. They may have been clever friends or not clever friends or old work colleagues. But the Lacquer Network is a network of entrepreneurs that want to do better. And I'm a strong believer in the fact that we all keep on talking about Google is dead. Big corporations are going to collapse. We've seen what's happened to the big four. They've all sort of like downsized. And I've seen since moving to Cape Town 12 years ago, the entrepreneurial spirit in our country is massive. I never really saw it a lot in the Eastern Cape because I was very sheltered there, but it's massive. And I think it's going to take the Lacquer network and the guys like, you know, like Mark Sham with Suits and Sneakers. It's going to take people like them and us to make this work for us at the end of the day and to get us out of this rut. But it's just so nice to see helpful fellow South Africans all around the world wanting to help us local South Africans. That to me is amazing. I had a meeting with Guy Ellis about 3 or 4 months ago, and I told him what I wanted to do. I said to him, I said, Guy, this is what I've got. This is Finance Fusion. I want to take it into America. He says, Andrew, you need a niche down. So I said, fine, I'll niche down. And then I niched down, and then he said, no, you need a niche even further. He says, this place is big. You need to really be niche. You need to be the best at it. Niche down. He gave me all this advice. And then I said to him, I said, Guy, what can I do for you? You know what he told me? He said, Andrew, I'm just here to help you. I'm just here to help you South Africans that are in South Africa. I want to help you guys. I can help you more than you can help me. And that gave me goosebumps. It's giving me goosebumps again. It's like amazing. Yeah.
No, absolutely incredible. I mean, having met Guy and interacted with him a couple of times as well, he's the real deal, and he's done absolutely incredible. And he's like almost become like a personal hero to many people, and people have been reading his book and seeing his posts on LinkedIn as well. He's got an incredible story, but also coming with that heart of how can I help you? And that's where it begins at the Lacquer Network, is how can we just help each other? One person helps another person, you completely change their life, you just set them on the path to success. That person is going to help other people.
I walked to my whiteboard last week. I was walking to work and my head was cluttered. There was so much in my head and I needed to write it down. Take it off my iPad, put it on a whiteboard, old school. Got to my whiteboard, wrote all the opportunities that I'm busy working on. And in brackets, I wrote TLN, the Lacquer Network, in all of the ones that related to the Lacquer Network. There are about 40% of them are all from the Lacquer Network. I mean, I think the other 60 probably happened before I even joined the Lacquer Network. But every single connection that I've made, I mean, you've recommended me to meet a few people. And every single person I've met, if they can't help me, has said, maybe you should speak to that person. Or maybe you should speak to my cousin in Dubai, or, you know, my friend in Joburg. And that to me is really Lacquer.
Mm. No, absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. No, it's a wonderful testament to the power of the Lacquer Network, and long may it continue. Now, Andrew, here at the Right Place podcast, we always end off our podcast with the same question to all of our guests. And that is, Andrew, where is your right place in 2025?
Helping non-finance teams to demystify the numbers so they can improve their bottom lines, and helping entrepreneurs to be able to understand in order to make better decisions. I think that for me is the right place. I mean, it doesn't matter where I am in the world, it's going to be my right place.
Absolutely. Love that answer, Andrew. Thank you so much. Andrew, I've really enjoyed talking to you today. As always, we always have a great chat. Thank you very much for your time. If people want to connect with you, learn more about you, your services, and also Finance Fusion, where's the best place to do that?
Probably email me, andrew@financefusion.com, or you can, my website's financefusion.com as well. Find me on LinkedIn. I think that's probably the best place. LinkedIn. Yeah.
Excellent, yeah. Andrew. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Andrew Fick from Finance Fusion. Please connect with him online. If you're in Cape Town, please set up a meetup with him. He's always great to talk to. Remember to follow and subscribe to the Right Place podcast. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you to our listeners for your support. And we will see you again next time at the Right Place. Cheers.
Thank you, John.